food fans. This is Alton Brown, and you're listening to the Alton Brown Cast, public service of the Alton Brown Broadcasting Network. We're really excited about the show this week because we're going to be interviewing the winner of the Food Network Star competition for this year, Damaris Phillips, a lot of people have asked me on social media, is that the name that was on the little paper that I put in my safe at the beginning of the competition? Well, you know, what if I say it was? Nobody's going to believe me because I could have just put it there. I could have put a piece of paper with everybody's name in there, right? And I didn't think to like put it in an envelope and have it postmarked. So in a way, it just doesn't matter because if I say yes, you'll just say liar. And if I say no, you'll say, oh, you're a horrible person. So let's just leave it at that. We're not going to worry about the little piece of paper in my safe. We're just going to be very, very glad that Damaris Phillips is going to be joining us on the podcast. And I don't think we're the first interview that she will have done since winning the competition, but I think that we're the first cool interview that she will have done. I have a hunch that one of my favorite foods, pickles, Big Food Group, is going to come up in conversation today. I have a hunch about that. And so I wanted to read a favorite quote of mine. This is from the food writer, Arena Chalmers, who said, "In the last analysis, a pickle is nothing more than a cucumber with experience." I like that. I'm not sure why this is, but I think that there have been more limericks written about pickles than almost any other food. And I think it's probably got to do with the fact that gherkin rhymes with jerkin. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But here's a famous one that I remember from, middle school days. There once was a lady named Perkins who simply doted on gherkins. They were so nice, she ate too much spice and pickled her internal workins. Notice the word jerkin was not used anywhere in that limerick. Welcome to the Alton Brown Cast. Alton Brown here, sitting here finally having a conversation one-on-one with Damaris Phillips, who, in the time since we last spoke, actually vanquished all her foes and rose to the top on Food Network Star and won. And this is the morning after, in fact. And she looks none the worse for wear. This is actually the first time I've seen Damaris Phillips looking kind of like a normal girl. She's not all like dolled up with these big butterfly eyelashes and stuff. How are you feeling there?
Tired.
What'd you do last night?
Walked around with a group of, you know, the other contestants trying to find somewhere to eat. And so it was, you know.
Where'd you end up?
Oh, at a Thai restaurant. At that point, I was so hungry that I could kill somebody. So I was like, oh, there's a Thai restaurant. This is where we're going. Because everybody, of course, when you're with like chefs or people that live in the city, they all have an idea of where we should go. Mm-hmm. And so it was a comical.
See, I don't want to hang out with chefs like that in the city because eventually what happens is that you just don't actually get fed.
That's because exactly there's so what much, was happening.
Well, we got to do this here and this over here. It's like, look, I don't care.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to go by myself and get something to eat and then meet up afterwards. But not in a mean way, but just in I was getting crazy
hungry. Well, don't you think you
kind
of deserve a little space and a little...
Well, I went to my room for a little bit before I went and met everybody.
Did you have a good cry? Or just have a good laugh? Did you jump on the bed? Did you call people? What'd you do?
I did not call people. I wanted it to be a surprise for everybody. So I did not call people.
Even your mom?
Even my mom.
Your mom. Yeah. You did not tell your mom?
I did not tell my mom. I told my gentleman. But it's because he's with me here. So he knows.
Lovely southern thing to say, my gentleman. That's
wonderful. He is a great man. I think he is more scared than I am. There's like this... like deer in the headlight look in his face, and he's a pretty simple guy, like not simple minded, but like his life is pretty simple.
And he's not Forrest Gump, but he lives like that.
No, I mean he's exactly like Forrest Gump. No, I mean he's amazing, but he would not be the type that would decide like I'm going to go on a reality television show so I can have my own show. It would never cross his mind to do that. So
did he think you were whacked?
No, he thought, he thinks I'm amazing.
Well, he should. I mean, that would be part of his...
He is very supportive, but I know that there's some little part of his mind where he's like, what are we getting into? Like, what is getting ready to happen?
And what is it you think is getting ready to happen?
You know, I'm a pretty cynical person, and so part of me is like, nothing's getting ready to happen. Like, everything's going to go back to normal. I'm going to be teaching in a week and a half, and everything's going to stay the same, except for I set a goal and I did it. You know, and that's an important thing to have in your life, like to have made a goal. And then, you know, like my goal was to go on Food Network Star and to see if I could win. And then I did. And so I didn't think a lot past that, like what was going to happen after that.
Like the dog never thinks about what he's going to do with the UPS truck after he catches the UPS truck.
It's just exactly.
Catch the truck.
Get the truck.
Get the truck. Oh, God, now I got the truck.
Now I have the truck. What am I going to do with all this mail? The thing that I thought was the most hilarious was, like, you're standing there, and on television, everything's pretty dramatic. There's, like, you know, music, and I don't know what I was thinking. So you're standing there, and then all of a sudden, it wheels around, and it's your picture. And I was like, well, okay, so now confetti and balloons and music.
And some champagne would be nice.
And maybe a cake. I don't know, a cake? Something.
Something.
But there's not.
There wasn't anything.
No, it's still a show that they're having to, like, film. And so you can't, I couldn't have, like, real reactions because I was like, well, I thought I was going to have, like, a mariachi band or something.
Where's,
I don't know.
There should at least be a pinata or something. So when during the competition did you actually think, hey, I might actually be able to win this? Was there a moment? Was there an actual flip of a switch where you suddenly got that?
When
hey, there's
Stacey
a possibility
got eliminated, that it wasn't until then.
Really? In other words, the very end, because she was the last one to go from the three.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't.
What did you think? Stacey had a lock on it?
I don't. I just thought that Stacey would be a good choice. Like Stacey's a bright woman. She can cook. Actually, I don't know. I mean, I've never really eaten her food. Actually, no, that's a lie. I have at an event we did together. Mm-hmm. We made food, but I just thought. She's a wonderful woman. She's talented. And I think it's hard to see when you're that close to people. Like, we don't see the footage. We don't see how people are on camera. We don't know what anybody's looking for. So all I can go on is who she is as a person. Mm-hmm. And she's a really wonderful, talented person who's kind and smart. And so I think when I think of what competition would be, and if I had a network, I would pick somebody who, you know, I wouldn't worry was going to be like, oh, God, they're in the tabloids. Or like, oh, Lord, what did they say now? You know, so.
Oh, Lord, fill in the blank. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You do have to decide what it is you're going to be and what it is you're going to do. And you've got to drive your career because if you don't, other people will. You don't want that.
No, thank you.
Unless, you know, I don't. What is it you do? What do you want? What do you actually want? Okay, you won.
Yeah.
Yay. You didn't get a pinata. You didn't get a cake. I'll open some champagne if you want.
I'm going to break it out. No, I don't need all that. I don't need a cake.
But what do you actually want now?
I like to make a difference.
What does that mean?
For me, I think that I would like for people to get back into the kitchen. Like, I would like for people to want to cook. I think that cooking and eating together as a family, we had a lot of stuff that my parents, you know, weren't perfect. But the thing that they did was we cooked and we ate together. And in my life, I know that that has affected who I am as a person. And I think it's, like, sometimes I think it's sad what's going on with people. Like, eating in front of television, eating in the car it's sad. And kids, like, I go and do after-school programs with middle school kids, and they don't know what vegetables are. Like, I'll hold up a tomato, and they don't know what a tomato looks like in whole form. And that is, it's heartbreaking.
You're serious? A tomato?
They thought it was an apple. An apple.
Well, maybe the way you were holding it was kind of like, you know.
It had the vines on it.
Oh, boy, it was that like is tough.
It was like I was holding it up, and I was like, okay, I was joking.
How old were these kids?
In 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And I do, each week I do a cooking club, so I go each week with, and I just get kids cooking, like making whatever it is.
Give me an example, like what?
So,
making what?
We'll do salad day. And so I teach them how to make dressing, because kids love ranch dressing.
Heck yeah, they do.
But you can make any dressings, and then they get pumped about eating salads. And so we will, I'll say, okay, everybody, next week we're making dressing. What's everybody's favorite type of dressing? Always ranch dressing, Thousand Island, and Italian. Those are what they always want to make. So then I bring in a ton of vegetables. I bring in whole vegetables. I bring in cut up vegetables. They put together a salad. They put the dressing on it, and then they're eating salad, and they're pumped about it. And so, yeah, you know, the first time I did it, I brought in a tomato and I held it up, and they're cut up tomatoes, and I held it up, and I was like, okay, everybody, what is this? Because we had gone through other ones, and they were like, apple. And I was like,
shut up.
I was like, come on. And they were like, it's an apple, right? And I was like, and you can't be like, are you all dumb? What's happening? I was like, no, guys, this is a tomato. And they're like, oh, okay. And they're like, well, that's a tomato. And they pointed to the cut up tomato. Right. Or they,
because they'd seen that.
Yeah, but they hadn't seen, like, and it's not like I'm not going to an affluent school by any means, you know, but I just think that that's, I just imagine the people that they are going to be when they grow up. And that is, if I could do anything to make people more connected to food, I think that that would be a good life work. Like, that would be something I could be proud of and stand behind. And, you know.
Why did you get into food in the first place? What pushed you that way? Was that always what you wanted to do?
Literally, my family, we will eat dinner and talk about what we're eating for breakfast. My whole family, extended family, everything. So it's
your foodies. You're all foodies.
Well, I mean,
or chow hounds, depending on how you
we like to eat. Okay. We like to eat. We like to eat good food, but there's not a lot of airs about it. Like, you know, like, oh my god, this is the best sausage I've ever had. You know, but nobody's pulling out like escargot, and like nobody's putting.
Nobody's saying, gee, I really think we should have used the Spanish saffron instead of the Turkish because this year's crop. Yeah,
they're like, have you been to Aldi's? There are some good deals on food there.
So you come from a long line of chow hounds.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've obviously got an emotional connection to that being around the table and
yes,
hospitality.
Yes.
Which we lose a lot in this culture because we so fixate on the food itself that we forget that the food actually doesn't have any real meaning until you're together eating it.
Absolutely.
That's the hospitality part. I did an interview with like a big bridal magazine. This is like 10 years ago. And they wanted to know the most important tool in the kitchen for newlyweds. And I said, kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, what?
What?
I said, kitchen table. I said, it doesn't matter what you do in there. Just if you don't have
somewhere to eat together,
a place to
sit look
down,
at each other,
talk and eat together, then the meal's got, it's just poop waiting to happen. They didn't like hearing that at all. But, you know, you obviously come from, and do you think that is a Southern attribute in this day and age? Because people are going to listen to you talk.
Yeah.
And people are going to listen to your experiences and the kind of food you have. And they say, this is a Southern woman. Is that a Southern thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that I've lived other places besides living in the South. And I find
where?
That I lived in Seattle for a while.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't see that in your bios.
Oh, I moved to Seattle. I followed a guy out there. He was a surgical resident. So he was doing a residency.
You're the type that you've done that. You're a romantic. You would
I
do that, wouldn't you?
I got rid of everything.
See it.
Yeah.
You did.
But that's where I was already, I had taught myself to bake already before that. And I was in coffee for a long time, for 10 years. I worked in coffee and stuff. So I went out there. So it was super easy to get a job in coffee.
In Seattle? Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
But I went out there and I got a pretty good job. And it was at the point where it was either open a coffee shop or start to own coffee shops or do something else. And I was out there and it was the first time that I wasn't around my family and my friends, because I, like, where I live, you can go 3 weeks and not see the same person and never have a spare minute. Like, really, somebody could call me every single day and I would never have to think about who I am and what I was doing and what I wanted out of life. I could just be hanging out with my friends and going to lunch or, you know, helping somebody with their baby shower or something. So I got out to Seattle. I didn't have any friends, and the guy I was with worked a lot, and he had a job that he absolutely woke up in the morning excited about. And he was making a difference in the way that he wanted to make a difference. And so it, like, looking at that every day made me, like, start to look at myself and say, what is it that I want to do? Like, what is it that I want to be besides a daughter and a sister and a friend and, you know, hopefully someday a wife? Like, who do I want to be besides the roles that I play in relation to other people?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to figure out what it was that I did just by myself, like what it was that I got excited about. And it was, you know, on Seattle, there's amazing food, like really, really lots of fresh food and lots of fresh seafood. And so I would go down to a market and I would pick out food and I would go home and I'd make these big elaborate dinners and I'd get up and do it the next day. And so I think that's where I decided to, like, I was out there and I was watching the Food Network and I was watching the show and I was like, well, I think that if I would go ahead and go to culinary school, I can do this. So I moved back home to Kentucky, went to culinary school.
I would hold that in real Southern homes. I mean, depending on what time of year it is, meats. I was raised by working class, you know, merchant class Southern people who was like, we didn't have meat at every meal. And if we did, it was a couple of slivers of somebody's ham.
That's exactly. It just is. It's not as, it's always for flavoring and never for the main.
It's not the bulk. That was always vegetables.
No.
Because everybody had gardens, you know.
You know, we got it from beans. We ate a lot of beans.
Beans and rice.
And so, yeah, it just, for me, I never am at the grocery store thinking like, oh, what's my.
What's my protein?
Never. My protein's always like, oh, I'll make some beans. Still to this day, I probably eat beans 4 times a week. Just because.
That's your staple.
Oh, I will.
Do you have favorite? Favorite beans?
I love black-eyed peas. I love them. They're not very versatile. So if I make a big pot of black-eyed peas on Sunday, I can't eat them in my tacos and I can't make
beans. They don't apply real, and it makes crappy hummus. And
So one time I put them in white chili. It was so bad. It was maybe one of the worst things I've ever made. It was like sand, eating sand in white chili.
Well, yeah, because they get grainier, grittier. They don't break down the way that a lima bean does.
Oh, God, limas.
Yeah.
My dad's favorite were butter beans.
Big butter beans.
Ooh, huge. Just, we'd be like, Dad, it's your birthday. What do you want? Butter beans and cornbread. Butter beans and cornbread.
See, I would still want some collard greens on the side of that.
Yeah. He did. My sister's favorite are greens, but yeah. My dad really just, he would just eat butter beans.
Are you good with greens? You cook greens?
Mm-hmm. I do, yeah. I do a miso green.
Okay.
I don't really find that I have to have bacon in. I mean, I don't mind bacon, but I don't like when people put a lot of bacon in greens because it makes the greens slimy.
Yep.
And that I think is gross. And so I have tried to find ways to make flavorful greens without the slime factor.
So you use miso?
I use miso. So yeah, miso
brown
paste.
Brown or white miso?
I can use any. I'll use red. Sometimes yep. I use yellow. I really like the black, like the super fermented.
In greens? Well, I haven't done that.
I think it makes a really nice flavor. And when I bring them anywhere, I try not to tell people things are vegetarian just because
it's no reason to.
They always,
because it always makes it sound like that was the mission.
And it's,
you know?
Not. It's no. just it's the just way cooking. To cook. Yeah. And so I'll just bring it and be like, oh, I made greens. And then people eat it, assuming that there's meat in it. And then afterwards, you know, it never hurts.
Well, that's the great thing about miso is it tricks folks because it's got all that kind of monosodium glutamate business in it.
Absolutely.
And the glutamates fool people.
Yeah, because it makes you think that
there's meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I got me a serious smoked ham hock issue. And I tend to cook collards in pressure cooker.
Okay.
Because I love pressure cookers, and I can get them to the consistency that I want them in about 45 minutes.
Do you stem and then leaves in? So you put the stems in first?
No, I don't. I don't use the stems.
At all?
No.
What do you do with them?
I throw them away.
Shut up. Are you serious?
Listen, I got a kid who will eat the greens, but not with the stems. And so I used to a long time ago. Do not judge me. Do not judge me.
I have an idea.
What I used to do is I used to take the stems first, and I made a broth with the stems. And then I built everything else on top of that. But even then, when I took the stems out, because I would throw the stems away, I would strain it out, and I'd keep that broth and then cook the greens in them. My daughter didn't like them. There was something about an astringency that was coming from the stems that she didn't like. So now I've gotten to where I just rip and dump. And I feel bad about it when I do it because I look at them in the trash can and I know what's wrong.
They're good pickled. That's what I do with them. If I have too many, I just pickle them.
You pickle the stems?
Absolutely.
All right, tell me about it.
Chard or kale or collards. Kale and chard are better because they are so much less hard and dense. But any of them are going to pickle. They'll break down. It takes a while, but you can break them down, and I sweet pickle a lot of them and use them.
Walk me through the procedure for that, for let's say, kale stems.
Okay, so kale stems, bias.
Tell it to me, like a story.
Okay, so I'm going to pickle my kale stems.
No, don't talk about what you're going to. Just tell it. Didn't you grow up with Uncle Remus or anything? Just tell it as a story. One of the great things you got to be able to do is talk. Why are you making this horrified look?
Well, I was
trying to... Talk the recipe. No, I'm saying you got to tell the recipe like a story. Here's what you do, and you do this, and you do this. People tell recipes like they're strange medical procedures. I'm wanting you to be able to tell...
A story about...
Well, tell... No, no.
How we
I want
do
you
it?
To tell the recipe. Teach me, through words, how to make these pickled stems in a way that's like a story. It's a narrative. It's poetic.
Okay. So
you got to be able to do that. It's a skill.
Okay, well, we'll practice, okay. And then we can get better.
Tell
Clearly
me.
Clearly, we'll get better. So I worked at a restaurant where everything came from 100 miles. So it becomes very, very important to use everything. And I was finding that with kale, like when we would cook the greens, there's always going to be way too many stems. So what are we going to do with these? And how are we going to preserve them in a way so that when it's January and we don't have anything, that we have... you know, an abundance in our pantry that we can use.
Okay.
And so I will pickle almost any vegetable that I can find. So I thought, well, let's try pickling these. So I started first by making them spicy. And so pickling liquid, I always go way more acidic than normal. A lot of recipes call for half and half. And I go... So half vinegar, half water. Mm-hmm. And I don't always go half and half. Sometimes I go 3/4, 1/4. And sometimes I go all vinegar, depending upon what vinegar I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost always...
Do you have a favorite pickling vinegar?
Rice wine. Always. Every time rice wine, because it doesn't have a ton of flavor. It's just... It's pretty subtle, but it has that nice, like, bite to
it's
it.
Sharp. It's sharp.
Yeah.
It's got the sharpness, but it's not... It doesn't make your eyes water.
Yeah, and it's bright like sherry vinegar, mm-hmm. but it's not... It doesn't have the flavor.
Right.
So... I started with the rice wine vinegar and salt, of course, and then I wanted it spicy, so I put some Thai chilies in there, and then some bay leaves and peppercorns, and I think I might have even done curry, like a curry, a little
curry
bit.
Curry powder or a curry?
Just curry, like things that go in curry, so
okay.
Turmeric and, you know, some coriander.
Whole spices, I
Whole spices,
okay.
Yeah, in there. Cloves, threw it in there and let them hang out for... You
now,
know.
How did you prep the stems themselves? I mean, are they whole? Or are they chopped up?
The first time I didn't chop them. I just put them in there. But what I found was they were slimy and hard to cut afterwards. Like, cutting up a pickle is kind of annoying.
And potentially gross. And it squirts on you.
Exactly.
It's like a sea cucumber.
And that's what happened the first... And that's nasty.
Okay. Yeah,
that's what happened
that
the first
nasty.
Time. So I had these long pickled stems. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll put them in a Bloody Mary. You know, like... But
they were all droopy, too.
And it was...
Yeah,
it was
that's
a,
foul.
It was a fail.
Yeah, that's bad.
Okay?
That's big.
So then I learned, okay, so let's chop them up. So I chop them on the bias so they look a little bit prettier. Because otherwise they just... Like, they are an odd shape. And you look at it and you're trying to figure out what this is. So on the bias, it kind of just becomes... You don't really know, but it looks a little bit like celery, so you kind of let it go,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I tried them spicy again, chopped up. Didn't love it that much. Then I thought, let's make them sweet and spicy. So I did same, rice wine vinegar, more vinegar, though, and because when you add the sugar, it takes away some of the acidity. So I did all vinegar, sugar, Thai chilies. Then I got rid of the curry flavor. And then let those babies hang out for... Heat it all up to where it, you know, is one homogeneous liquid. I heat it up and then I cool it down because you don't want to cook the stems because they will cook in that hot liquid. So cool that down and put it in there and let it hang out for 2 weeks and brought it out. And they are delicious. I mean, I put them in potato salad. I put them in...
I never would have thought to do that.
Well, you have to use them.
But now...
You can try it.
I'm gonna...
Kale is the best, without question.
I can understand that.
Oh, my. You know, it is so good.
I eat a lot
good.
Of kale. I
eat
a
lot
of
kale, too. What is it?
Give me a...
Napa.
Cabbage.
Oh, pickled. That's one of my favorite,
okay.
too. So, but not, again, not the greens, just the really, like, watery, thick part. Oof, delicious.
Well, I come from a home of, well, if we can't figure out what to do with it, pickle it. I mean, if when all else fails, before you throw it out, pickle it. But I had not done that with the stems.
Yeah.
I mean, every fruit, every rind, every, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, when I grew up, my grandmothers both were massive picklers. Mm-hmm. So, and because of that, there are always jars of stuff. I'm addicted to pickled juice and pickle brine. I reuse it for other things. I've got a whole series of cocktails that I make just out of the brine left over from
that
pickles.
That is pickled peach, the juice of that, and beets. Beets make a beautiful cocktail.
Yeah. They do. I'll take that and cook it down into a syrup and make like a Cure Royal with it, but it's beet juice.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
That sharp... You know what shrubs are? You know, mm-hmm. the old colonial drinks that were mm-hmm. all based on vinegar? I think they're... That's something that Americans, by and large, our palate, I guess, we're so sweet-obsessed that we mm-hmm. just can't get the whole acidity thing the way we should.
I love even... I like a beer. Even when I choose a beer, I choose... like a real, I'm like, what is your most sour beer mm-hmm. that you have? And it almost tastes like vinegar when you're drinking it, but mm-hmm. it just hits you in a way that you can like fist fight. I mean, I don't usually fist fight, but it makes you feel like you could fist fight.
When's the last time you were in a good fist fight?
7th grade.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Boy or girl?
Girl.
What'd she do?
Well, in the 6th grade, so I grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood in middle school. Not super rough, but it was rougher than I had originally. My dad owned a funeral home. We
I did
moved
not know
to
that.
The funeral home. We lived above the funeral home, and it was in a neighborhood that was.
This doesn't surprise me, and I'm wondering why. I can completely see
home?
You living over a funeral.
Oh,
home.
Oh yeah, I mean, it just makes for a different type of person. I think
it gives you a whole new set of equipment to pump hams with and it, stuff. You could do
exactly.
all kinds of things.
Exactly. Well, it just so I swear I think even the funeral home shaped me into the way I think about food because. Like, a lot of the people didn't have a ton of money. My dad was not a great businessman because he was so kind that people would show up and they'd be like, my son just died. We don't have any money. And he'd be like, okay, well, I'll just give it to you at cost. Or not even at cost. They couldn't, you know.
Give me some pickles.
Yeah. But everybody's hungry at a funeral. Mm-hmm. Everybody. And they didn't have a ton of money. Like, and so my dad would, part of it, would he be like, Damaris, go make a meat tray. So I was always making meat trays and cheese trays and making brownies for these families at the funeral home because there'd be a whole family sitting around and nothing to eat, just crying and stuff. And so my dad would be like, well, this is a gift that we can, like, this is what you should do.
See, I don't think people are actually hungry at funerals. I just think that eating is such an affirmation of being alive.
I think so, too.
That to you need to do it because it proves we're alive. It, we're not dead. We're alive.
Yeah, I think it grounds you again yeah. and makes you feel something other than... just an overwhelming grief. So, you know.
Although overwhelming grief sometimes is just what it is.
And you have to feel it. Hmm. But sometimes you can take a little break from that, and a ham sandwich will help for just a minute, and then you can go back to, you know.
Have you had the kind of grief that is only fixed with a ham sandwich?
My dad passed away a few years ago, so.
And you had a ham sandwich.
Yeah, I remember... everybody's showing up to my mom's house at night with just baskets of food. And I remember
Did he die surprisingly?
He had a heart attack.
Okay. Changes things? That changes the dynamic.
Yeah. He had a valve that was messed up in his heart for a long time. So
how old was he?
59. And okay.
That's young.
Yes, super young. I remember he got sick. He started to get sick when my teen years. And then just every month or so, he'd be in, like, intensive care. And they said when I was 16 or 17, like, you probably are not going to live more than a year. Your heart is going to not work. And they wanted him to have a valve replacement, but he was a big guy, and he was scared, really. I mean, it just came down to he was afraid he wouldn't wake up from the surgery. So he's like, I'll just take my chances. And he lived from that time, like, 8 or 9 years longer. So... we had a lot of good time, but there was always this, like every time the phone rang, you were worried, like, you know, I spent a lot of time.
That's the call.
Yeah.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Until finally one day it was.
Yeah. And my brother was like, Damaris, I need you to get in your car. I need you to drive safely, but you need to come down to Jewish Hospital. And I, like, the whole time I knew, just driving down there, it's a terrible feeling. Terrible feeling knowing that. Your life is just altered and not in a way that you are ever going to be happy about. So.
Because you and your dad were close.
Oh, my God. He was my best. I mean, my best. Mm.
I hope my daughter will look like that.
She will. I mean, God, he was awesome. One time I was like, Dad, what is wrong with me? Like, I can't get it together. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't even have my bachelor's degree yet. I was like 23 or something, you know. And you think at that point you're supposed to have
it figured out. It's over, yeah, because we're supposed to all have it together.
I've lost my chance, you know. And he looked at me and he goes, honey, I'm 57. I only have my associate's degree. And he was like, you know what? I'm damn proud of my associate's degree. He's like, you are magnificent. And he just was, I mean, just.
He used that word?
Magnificent, yeah. He would. And now one time, my first time I was heartbroken, I said, Dad, why? Why didn't he love me? Like, I just remember crying. I just had to stay at my parents' house because I was that heartbroken. Why didn't he love me? And my dad looked at me and he said, how can you expect a man to stand in your shadows his whole life? And he was like,
damn, I like this guy.
Right? Oh,
man.
I mean,
that's sharp.
God, he was like, you are a really tall, tall, tall oak. And that one was just going to be, he's like, you expect him to never see any sunshine? He's like, you just got to pick a taller tree next time.
Your expressions are take me back. You say things that I haven't heard for a really long time.
My dad was from Dalton, Georgia, and my mom was from West Virginia, but they were Dalton, Georgia, capital of the world.
I've been there.
It is I love going back to Dalton. They're very, very sweet, but it's Dalton. It's always going to be Dalton. They're always going to be like, oh my God, we haven't seen it. Y'all come back now, you know?
Drop by Marietta sometime when you're come a little further down the road. We're just off 75.
So that was my mom and my dad, or my dad was Dalton, Georgia raised, and very traditional Dalton, Georgia cooking. Mm-hmm. And my mom was raised.
Which means a lot of salt.
A lot.
They like a lot of salt.
A lot of salt. And pan fried, lots of chicken fried steak, lots of gravy, biscuits, you know. What you think of. My mom grew up in West Virginia, but with parents that were both from the North. My grandmother was from Detroit, and my grandfather was from New York. So,
what brought them to West Virginia?
Job. Okay. They got a job, and then they moved over to Louisville when my mom was 12 or 13. So my mom's lived in Louisville.
But they were Yankees.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But because my mother was West Virginia, we were always the Yankee cousins. They'd be like,
West Virginia.
Right.
Yankee cousin, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Getting close to the line.
Kentucky, yeah. I mean, really, Kentucky is pretty close to the North.
You're
you know?
A questionable heritage.
On a map, we are sometimes considered Southern on a lake.
But what was the food like in that side of the family, the West Virginia?
So, again,
by way of
lots
Detroit.
Of what you would see in New York and in Detroit, lots of, what I think of as like deli, you know, things that are lots of fish, lots of smoking, lots of things that like lots of smoked salmon. But my mother then became like a hippie kind of woman, and so she was all about, like, she made us yogurt growing up.
She got all crunchy granola on you,
absolutely.
Didn't she?
Absolutely. So I had my dad Dalton, Georgia, and my mom making granola. Like, that's the first memory I have is my mom making granola. And
yeah, see, your dad had probably never even had yogurt.
Oh, I mean,
we never tasted yogurt.
Yeah,
it's quite possible.
And they meld like that went together, and so my dad loved hamburgers on Saturday. He was so hilarious. On Saturday night, you had to eat hamburgers.
I like him.
Like, that was what it was. My mom would be like, what do you want to do for dinner? He's like, well, it's Saturday. Like, that answers.
Well, it is Saturday.
It's Saturday. She'd be like, if I could eat something besides a GD hamburger on Saturday.
Did she say GD or did she say G? Okay.
I just said it for. But then we also had lots of tofu. Like,
did she ever, like, try to slip tofu into his burger?
Oh, no. He would be fine with it. Like,
oh, what?
He taught meditation. He was a meditation instructor.
I'm sorry, that doesn't fit.
It fits in that he was. I know. He was a preacher. He loved.
But you hadn't mentioned that either.
But not a preacher, like not Southern Baptist preacher, but really, really interested in religion. Absolutely. And he was interested in religion, in the way that religion is all tied together. He actually grew up Jehovah's Witness.
Wow.
They were disfellowshipped. Mm-hmm. So,
Dalton, Jehovah Witness.
Dalton, Jehovah Witness. Yep, disfellowship.
That's radicalized.
I know,
in a way.
I know.
But what an interesting... How did that influence you?
We weren't Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, we.
She's shaking. She shook her head vehemently.
No, I mean, he was disfellowshipped when I think he was 17 or something. I think because my grandmother wanted to get I can't remember why. But
it could be any.
Yeah, who knows?
Long
I don't
list
know.
Of things.
But I think that started my dad on a path of like really looking at religions mm-hmm. and trying to find which one worked for him. And
did he find one?
I mean, yeah, he was a Christian. But he for a lot, I mean, Southern Baptists wouldn't have loved the way that he was Christian. You know, like he was more, there was more of a metaphysical interpretation of the Bible than a literal interpretation. And so that becomes very controversial, you know, with people. So, but because of that, he also looked at, you know, being Hindu or looking at being Buddhist and looking at, you know, being Muslim and seeing how a lot of the same practices are in their prayer and meditation and, mm-hmm. and that. And so he taught meditation. So he did a lot of practice in meditation and we were all brought up meditating. Like it was one of the tools that our parents gave us that I think is the greatest thing that they gave us besides like a love of cooking and a love of family.
So this is something you do?
Absolutely. I don't do it because I'm trying to connect or I just do it as like a relaxation or a calming technique. When I get really anxious, like yesterday I was like, just breathe, just focus on breathing and you will be able to get through this. It's really hard to see what is real. And I don't like that. I don't like knowing if people actually believe in you or if you are a joke or if you are...
That's for you to decide.
No, I know, but I don't like being in a situation when people are like, you're great, but then not knowing if... I don't know, I just...
Well, guess what? That will plague you if you are successful. You will find yourself trusting fewer and fewer people. I basically
like
only trust people that knew me before I was on television.
Yeah.
And that guy sitting over there has known me since for 20 years.
91.
Years. Well, he doesn't count over there because he just doesn't care. But seriously, the only people whose opinion I listen to are people that
knew me before. Yeah.
A guy that taught me how to fly, who I travel with constantly. He's more concerned with if I nailed the last landing. You know, he just doesn't care. So I trust him.
Yeah.
Because of that. But your circle will get
smaller. Thankfully, I started out like I won't ever be lonely. Like thankfully, I started.
You already had a lot of friends.
Oh,
had a lot of friends
for sure.
And you'll need them.
Yeah, and I have a great. I mean, I'm one of five siblings, so I have four other people that would. Do anything for me. Anything. I mean, if I kill somebody and need to hide a body, they would be there before I could hang the phone up. Like they are.
Well, you'd probably pickle it anyway.
Heck yeah.
Your show.
Yes.
When it happens.
Yes.
Do you actually think you're going to be able to pull off what your pilot was on the competition?
I don't know. I mean, do I think I could go around and help... I mean, I see a way that it could be done. It would need to be looser than it was in the pilot.
I think you can do that within a larger context. I don't think it has to be that specialized, personally.
I don't think that it necessarily needs to be men cooking for women or one gender cooking for another gender or... I mean, I think it could be same gender cooking for same gender. It doesn't matter to me, you know.
I just want you to do a funeral cooking show. I think that would be awesome.
God. I mean, I think...
cooking.
I just want... I don't know. Yeah, funeral. Cooking for a funeral. Yeah. Yeah,
I love that idea. It's so Southern Gothic. I can see you doing
that. Oh, man. Oh, Chevitz. Wouldn't that be fun? God.
Be like some kind of twisted Faulknerian...
He'd be like, I've got the best funeral food. No, I've got the best funeral food.
We'll just wait for somebody to die and find out.
Whose deviled eggs are the best?
When are you going home?
Saturday. I cannot. I'm trying to stay away because I know everybody's going to look at my face.
Yeah, you need to lay low.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
You're not a real good.
No.
You don't mask well.
No.
So you should lay low until
Sunday.
Half of
it, though, I didn't know which way I wanted to go. Like half of me was standing there, and I was like, "Oh, I hope I don't win." And then half of me was like, "Oh, I hope I really win."
Yeah, we all wondered that about you. Does she?
I just don't want to be. Yeah, I want to be a good influence to people. I want to cook. I love to cook. I want to meet people. I want to connect with people for cooking. I'd like to travel the world and go eat a bunch of food and go to nice food events. Like, that sounds fine to me.
Well, I, for one, will be very interested in seeing what happens in here next year.
Ugh.
Breathe. Just keep breathing.
I am.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It is a pleasure. Yeah, pleasure to meet you.
All right, I want to get into a little bit more pickle talk. Pickle, I'm going to make pickle the food of the day, just kind of, you know, in honor of our Food Network Star winner, who I know is a major, big-time pickle maker. Three types of pickles, of course. Well, I think just about all pickles fit into these. First, you've got fermented pickles, and a lot of people would argue that these are the best. This is where you would find your kosher dills and your hardcore kind of sour dill pickles. And this is a process that's really interesting because it relies on naturally occurring bacteria to create lactic acid. And that acid preserves the food by basically making it very unfriendly for other bacteria. The thing is that you've got to control which bacteria get in and which ones don't. So you need like a bouncer, a chemical bouncer. And for that, you use salt. If you're making sauerkraut, you can literally just sprinkle the salt. But very often when small pickling cucumbers are being used, you're talking about a brine. So you soak it in this brine, but it allows in these wild bacteria, and in usually about 6 weeks, you have the fermented pickle. Just depending on the size and shape, the food, and very much so, it depends upon the temperature. I make sauerkraut a lot, and we made that on TV once, and I think that generally 6 to 10 days to make that. You know, because it bubbles. It always helps to be able to do pickles, to ferment pickles, in something where you can see through and really see what's going on in there. You have to do a lot of skimming and scumming because weird things do sometimes form on the surface. And crocks, you have to, you know, crocks come with a lid that drops down so that it weights the food. And usually there are holes in the top of the crock lid to allow that moisture up through there so that the food stays completely submerged. It's absolutely critical if you're going to try to make fermented pickles. Another kind of pickle, easier certainly to make. Matter of fact, I imagine this is the most readily available pickle in the United States, certainly commercially, are called fresh pack or quick process. And this is where either fruits or vegetables are bottled with a flavorful liquid, typically acidic, typically salty, sometimes sweet. And then those jars are sealed and pasteurized, I think usually to about 160 degrees. But there are different time temperature programs, sometimes lower temperatures for longer, sometimes shorter times for higher temperatures. And they last, most of them, I think manufacturers will tell you they last about 18 months, but they always suggest, the manufactured ones at least, that they be refrigerated after opening. If you've got a jar of pickles in your refrigerator right now, I'm going to bet that they were done with the fresh pack or what's called the quick process. Then you've got the most popular homemade pickle, which would certainly be refrigerator pickles. All right, now this is a method. These are not what we'd call keeping pickles or storing pickles. You can't like put them up on the shelf and leave them there for a couple of years. You can only keep them in the refrigerator, and generally only for a few weeks. They use an acid, typically a pickle, which is a liquid, a pickling liquid, that is pretty high in acid, usually vinegar, sometimes a combination of vinegars, that are used to preserve the food, to keep out bacteria, keep bacteria and mold at bay. But they cannot be stored outside of the refrigerator. They've got to be kept at refrigerator temperatures or very, very bad things happen. All right, let's go to the phones and take a question. Good evening, Jonathan. You're talking to Alton Brown on the Alton Brown Cast. What's up, Jonathan?
Well, my question was, it's probably one that other people have asked you.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you if that's true.
Do you have any plans for shows, whether it's on TV or as a webcast?
Well, it's funny you mention that. Number one, nobody's asked. Number two, yes, on both counts. I'm in the process. Matter of fact, we're in the middle of editing right now material for my new YouTube channel, which is going to be something that Good Eats fans like very, 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 very much, because we'll be doing a lot of things that will remind them of Good Eats, but then we're doing things that you can't get away with on network television. So you'll have that to look forward to. And I'm also doing a brand new project for Food Network, and the name of the program is Cutthroat. Cutthroat Kitchen. And it is a game show, a true game show, and it is a hoot. It is a lot of fun. And I'm doing it because it's fun. And we're moving on to our next call, because believe it or not, there is another person out there in the world that wants to squander some perfectly good time talking to me, probably about food. And our next person up on the list here on the Alton Browncast is Greg. Greg, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
What can I do for you today?
So my question, I want to know if you have any good camping recipes or any, you know, kind of direction therein. And I also wanted to know if you ever would consider doing a Good Eats camping episode.
Well, I wouldn't do a Good Eats camping episode because I retired Good Eats and I don't make it anymore. I would, however, do a some cooking, some camp cooking on my new YouTube channel that's going to be launching, because I'm a big outdoor cooking enthusiast. I don't get to camp as much as I used to because I have a 13-year-old daughter and we have to bring three Sherpas with trunks of her beauty products. But I like cooking out of doors a great deal. I have Dutch ovens in various sizes that I use for baking around the campfire, and I'm very big on spits. Are you planning on camping? Are you doing the kind of camping where one stays close to one's car, or are you doing the kind of camping where you got to carry in for days and days?
A little of both, depending on if it's a long weekend or not. I have a 14-year-old son that I take with me, so we're just kind of trying to keep, you know, keep it fresh and different things. One thing that we had seen was to make breakfast in paper bags on the campfire. Like, you line the bottom with bacon of the paper bag, and it actually won't burn. It just cooks because of all the grease.
Here's the thing. It will burn. It most certainly will burn. And when it burns, it'll burn for a really long time. The point is that once paper has some oil on it, it can take, due to what's called the specific heat of oil, it can take a direct flame for a while. It cannot take high heat for very long. Also, brown paper bags tend to create a great deal of smoke, which may or may not be a problem for where you're camping. If you're going to be cooking on the you know, if you're traveling on foot, I really do suggest a decent set of camp cookware. There are a lot of companies now that make very, very lightweight stuff. And the thing is that, you know, I cook very differently if I'm car camping or if I'm carrying in, you know, a mile or two. I take a lot of options with me. I can even bring a cooler. But if I'm hiking in 20 or 30 miles, then obviously, you know, we're on freaking nuts and berries.
Yeah, you're not going to take the whole set. No Dutch ovens on that trip.
No,
right?
I'm not taking any Dutch ovens. I mean, I'm going to have them dropped by helicopter, you know. Obviously, and then it also changes, you know, do you know you're going to be camping next to a lake that you know is going to be stocked with fish? Because then I know that I'm going to take fishing gear because I know I'm going to be putting something into that pan that I'm bringing along. Otherwise, I don't know that I'm not going to just be bringing my own beef jerky and a few dehydrated things.
So it really does depend. I'd appreciate it if you did a camping episode there like you mentioned on YouTube. That'd be great.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely get onto it. And by the way, like I said, if I'm near a source or I'm near enough stuff to where I can do a rotisserie or a spit, I will definitely spit fire me something. Whatever I can get my hands on over fire always tastes better than something that's not over the fire. So thanks a lot for calling in. Sam, I'm really interested in food words, food terms, where they come from, what they mean. And believe it or not, I mean, pickle may seem like kind of just a silly word, but it has several different meanings, and it has some interesting backgrounds. Now, I know that there's, if you look it up in the Oxford English Dictionary, you'll find pikel, I think is how it's pronounced, P-I-K-E-L, Middle English word, which means a spicy sauce or gravy served with meat or fowl. I'm reading that. I don't know that off the top of my head. Then there's a Middle Dutch word. This one I do know. Pickle refers to usually the solution that pickles are soaked in. And the Dutch also came up with a phrase, in de pickle zitten, which means sitting in the pickle, which, of course, leads to being in a pickle. Now, in American parlance, and I think also English parlance, being in a pickle means being in trouble. That was a term, I believe, first coined in English by Shakespeare in... what was The Tempest, right? A character asks a drunk character, how came you into such a pickle? The pickle being a reference to alcohol, and being in a pickle was being drunk. We take that as being in trouble. Boy, you got yourself in a real pickle, didn't you, with that one. So a very, very interesting word. Pickles have been around a really long time. We know that pickling was common as far back as ancient Mesopotamia. Some historians have said that Cleopatra herself, who is supposedly quite a babe, attributed a lot of her good looks to eating a diet high in pickles. By the way, last one that I'm going to throw out here is that whenever you say kosher in front of dills, all it really means, it doesn't mean that it's kosher. Nobody, I mean, sure, it's kosher in that it doesn't have any unkosher things in it. You know, if you were to break open Deuteronomy, whatever it is, you would see that everything's fine there, and a rabbi's not going to tell you not to eat them. But what it specifically means in the world of pickles is that garlic has been added to the brine. Food for thought. All right, I know technically there's no such thing as an internet mailbag. There's just a big inbox that gets full of things. But let's pull a question out at random. I'll just reach my cyber hand into the virtual mailbox and pull out a note. From Facebook, Dave Hartley asks, best fat to use in making omelets, clarified butter, regular butter, salted or unsalted, or cooking spray. What's interesting is I actually think that the better flavor comes from using clarified butter. But here's the thing, especially in the morning when I'm kind of sloppy in the head, I rather use just cold unsalted butter out of the fridge because as it melts, it kind of tells me when the pan is ready. It melts and then it foams. And then when that foaming dies down, I know that the pan and the fat is hot enough for me to add the eggs. So I'm going to always vote for just plain old cold butter going into that omelet pan. So great question. All right, here's one from a whole family. This comes from the Ballantyne family. Danielle, Sean, Rowan, and Maeve are asking me, what meal would you want to cook and or enjoy before you die? Well, if I'm going to die, I hope that if I'm dying and I know I'm dying, I won't have to cook it. Hopefully somebody else will cook it for me because I don't know that I want to do that. Or I might really drag it out. You know, like I might make cassoulet, you know, which takes like, you know, 20 hours to do it right. Or duck confit, which takes 3 days, you know, just because I don't want to rush things too much. I don't want to know when I'm having my last meal. I'd rather be surprised by death. So pickles, I make a fair amount of pickles. A lot of the pickles I make are fermented pickles, like kraut. But everybody that's going to start pickling, you need a beginning place. And I really do think that the best place to begin is a refrigerator pickle. It doesn't take any special equipment, really. You don't have to process anything. You don't have to, you know, worry about killing anybody. The only thing is you've got to eat them within a few weeks. You know what? I should say my attorneys would advise me to say 2 weeks. Truth is, I've kept them from up to a month without any problem at all. Anyway, this one's that I call the sort of sours. I'm going to break down the recipe in three bits. There's going to be the target foods, the thing we're going to pickle. There's going to be the pickle or the pickling solution. We call that a pickle. And then there are going to be the flavorants, which although very nice to have, aren't necessarily playing the role of a preservative. Okay, so we've got target, then the pickle, and then the flavorants. Okay, so here's what we're going to pickle. We're going to pickle a small onion, sliced thin. I don't care how you slice, you know, which angle, just sliced thin. Two medium cucumbers, thinly sliced. Okay, four whole cloves of garlic, and just smash those. Lay them out on a board, peel them, of course, and then lay a side of a chef's knife on them or a board scraper or something and just give them a nice smash. You don't want to knock them into, you know, obliterate them. Just smash them up because we do want to get some flavor out of them and get some flavor into them. Then the pickle. Okay, this is the pickling solution. My pickling solutions almost always have in them water, a vinegar or combination of vinegars, sugar, and salt. Okay. And of course the salt is also a flavor and everything here is a flavor, but this is the engine room. This is what you can't really play around with or things aren't going to work right. All right. It's a very standard one for me. I use a cup of water, a cup of cider vinegar. It's apple cider vinegar, half a cup of champagne vinegar, and half a cup of a granulated sugar and 2 tablespoons of kosher salt plus 2 teaspoons. You're going to need another teaspoons for that later. So water, 2 different vinegars, sugar, salt. Okay. Now, a lot of my pickles, I actually use rice wine vinegar, but not this one. I need a little bit of a different flavor profile on this one. You could switch up the champagne vinegar for a wine vinegar or a sherry vinegar, but I like the champagne vinegar better, and I think it's the right thing to keep around. Keep in mind, you only want to change around vinegars in a recipe if you're trading out one that has an equal acidity percentage. All right, now we get down to the flavor part, okay? This is all spices. a teaspoon of mustard seeds, a quarter teaspoon of ground turmeric. Notice I didn't say turmeric. I said turmeric. It's T-U-R. 1 teaspoon of celery seeds and just a teaspoon of pickling spice, which is usually a combination of spices. It will also include some of the mustard seed. Depending on where you get it and what brand, it could contain a whole lot of things. I get mine from a place called The Spice House up in Evanston, Illinois. Just go to spicehouse.com. They got some great pickling spices. Okay, here you go. So you're going to combine the onion, the cucumber, and the garlic and in a spring top jar. That's kind of like a mason jar, but it's got a kind of a rubberized seal and then a little clasp device. The lid is springy with it's a wire thing around it. And then there's a little clasp that levers down onto it to hold it in place. I like those for pickles because you can operate it with one hand and it'll kind of pop off and you can put it back on. If you use something like a ball jar or a mason jar, you got all those different pieces to fumble with when all you really want to do is get a hold of a pickle. So I like these spring top jars. So you want to make sure that you have got it should be a big jar. It's funny. It's just a quart. That's all this makes, just a quart. So you want a quart jar. It should be very, very, very clean. All right. So after you put all the food in the jar, all the target food in the jar, you're going to combine the water, the cider vinegar, the champagne vinegar, sugar, salt, mustard seed, turmeric, basically everything else, pickling spices and everything in a saucepan. Bring that to a boil, then drop the heat and simmer it for 4 minutes. Now there's nothing magical really about the 4 minutes other than it gives us some time to wake up the spices, as we say, and extract some flavors from those into the liquid. Then you're simply going to pour that hot pickling liquid over the onion, cucumber, and garlic, right? Completely filling the jar. You want to get right up to the shoulder of the jar. A little bit of airspace is okay, but you don't want much. Let the pickles cool down. I usually, you know what I do is I usually put the lids on very loosely. And in this case, you're just using that spring lid, so I don't clamp it down on the way. Just kind of bring it down and let it sit till it cools out a little bit. And then clamp it down good after it cools. And make sure that when it comes down to room temperature, take a look at it right before you put it in the refrigerator. And if it can take a little bit more liquid, typically what will happen is the food itself, the cucumbers and the onions will take in some of that liquid. So you might find that you can put a little bit more in the jar before you finally seal it up. Stick it in the fridge. And I would leave it in there a week before serving. Okay. And they will be wonderful pickles, refrigerator pickles. And I would just say try to eat them within the month. All right, here's a fun little piece that came from Twitter, my feed just today. It came in from someone who identifies themselves as Art Girl Dreamer, whatever that means. Guess it's kind of cute. Anyway, she says, making orange curd with my son, and he told me he thinks it will taste like jelly and pudding had a baby. You know what? And I would tell him that is exactly what it is. Jelly and pudding got together and had a baby, and it became orange curd. And I'm going to stick with that story from here on out because that rocks. All right, here's another question from Twitter. And this is the kind of thing that just it drives people like me crazy because it's a problem with multiple potential issues. And it comes from Anthony Danton, and he says, "Hey, mister." I like that. "Hey, mister. Hey, any thoughts on how to solve cakes sinking? My carrot cake falls in the center almost 99% of the time." Okay, here's the deal. Cakes falling, it's one of the number one complaints. Matter of fact, no. Cakes falling after they come in the out of the oven or either, you know, like right at the end of baking is the number one complaint that I hear. But here's the problem. It can be multiple things, and you've got to rule each one of them out, okay? Your oven could not be hot enough is one potential problem. Of course, it could also be that your oven is too hot and that it's actually rising very, very quickly because of what we call oven spring, but the inside's not setting enough for it to set, you know, before it falls, before that steam dissipates. So it could be either one. It could be that you're using too much leavener, specifically baking powder, which is like blowing everything up like a blimp and making these huge bubbles that can't support themselves on the inside. It could also be a mixing problem, but if I was going to guess on one, I would guess that it's, well, let's say that you're doing the recipe correctly. We know that your baking powder is good and that you're using those amounts correctly. I'm going to say that it's your oven and that you are not hitting the temperature, that recipe calls for. But by the way, if you are adding like more baking powder, then that's the real problem, but we're not going to say anything. Damaris Phillips and I are lucky in that we share a Southern heritage. She's from further up south than I am. I'm from Georgia. Confession. I mean, I was born in California, but my mom and my dad were from Georgia, and they moved to California on their honeymoon, and they had me, and then they came back when I was like 8 years old. So I've lived in Georgia all my life. Anyway, we're both very lucky, Damaris and I, in being Southern. I think that culinarily speaking, it's a pretty great place to be from. And so I want to give you one more pickle recipe. This is actually from something that if you're a fan of the program Feasting on Asphalt, you would have seen. And it's something that you run into in the deep south, especially in Mississippi. And this is called a coolickle. It's a coolickle recipe. It makes a gallon of coolickles. So here's what you do. You buy yourself a gallon jar of kosher dill pickles, the big whole kosher dill pickles. Now you can get these at like Costco and places like that. You know, any place, one of these big stores that sells massive containers of things. You want a full gallon. Okay. Got it. All right. Now you're going to need two packages of unsweetened, Kool-Aid. Okay. Just two packages, unsweetened Kool-Aid, and it should be cherry Kool-Aid, and don't use another brand and don't use another flavor. You want cherry Kool-Aid. You want the unsweetened ones. Okay. And you're also going to need a pound of sugar. I love this. Okay. So here's what you do. You take all the liquid, you drain all the liquid out of the pickle jar, okay, into a big container. And then you add the drink mix and the sugar to that pickle liquid, and you stir it until the sugar is completely dissolved. It'll take a while. There's no reason to heat it up. No reason. It'll take a little while, but everything will dissolve, okay? Then while that's kind of sitting, take all the pickles out of the jar and slice them in half long ways, okay? That's going to help for flavor penetration a lot. Not everybody does that, but I do, okay? And then put everything back in the jar. Everything, okay? Odds are good. Not all of the liquid is going to fit, okay? But you want to make sure that all of the pickles are completely covered by the liquid. And if some of it's left over, some of that liquid's left over, I got news for you. You can mix it with vodka. I'm serious. You can mix it with vodka, and it makes a pretty obnoxiously wonderful cocktail. Anyway, cover, put the lid back on and refrigerate that massive jar of pickles for 1 week before eating. And I know that it sounds odd, kids. I understand, but I got to tell you, they're freaking wonderful. It's this sharp, bright, sour cherry candy pickle, and they're really great in the summertime, served cold. And you either just like put them in those little kind of paper trays that you see hot dogs in. You can put them in that to serve them, or you can even put a stick, like a skewer, on the inside of it and eat it that way. Anyway, coolickle. It's one of the great things about the South, and if you haven't had one, well, gosh darn it, now you can. All right, well, that's the Alton Browncast for another week. Want to thank Damaris Phillips for being on the show, and congratulate her for her stunning Food Network star victory. That kid's going to go places, I got a feeling. And anyway, so hopefully we'll have her back on soon. In the meantime, kids, remember, cook smart.